on the Rebel Sports Network from Learfield IMG College, live from Parkway Tavern. This is the Tony Sanchez Show, presented by Fenley Toyota. Also by Parkway Tavern, the official home of the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. This is your home for the UNLV Rebels. Now with Caleb Herring and Steve Cofield, here's the voice of the Rebels, Russ Langer.
And a very pleasant good evening to you live from Parkway Tavern on West Flamingo, where tonight the Tony Sanchez Radio Show is in full gear. Tony Sanchez is right here. We have Caleb Herring here, and perhaps we'll be joined by Steve Cofield in a little bit. Of course, we've got the whole crew from Learfield IMG hanging behind us. And if you've never been out here, food specials, drink specials during the show, and a great atmosphere here. Good food, really good service, and screens all over the place. They got every kind of sport you want. Got the World Series on. You got football, soccer, a whole smorgasbord here, Coach. Everything.
Great spot. Great spot to come watch ball games. Like you said, you got the World Series on right now. Good game, 2-2.
It's that time of year, too. I mean, like the doors open, the patio is open, the outdoors. You can watch from there. You can come inside. Every sport's in swing right now. Basketball's back. Baseball's in the heat of it. College football's still swinging. So there's sports to go around at this bar.
October in Vegas. Best. Best month out of the year. And so this is the time of the year we can open up the doors and everything, like you say, Caleb, and not have perspiration pouring out like the waterfalls that we were at recently.
That's right.
And also, we don't have to wear jackets. It's just ideal. So the Rebels, we're going to discuss the Fresno State game. We've got a special guest, one of the Rebel coaches, Cedric Cormier, will join us in the second half. And then we'll get into the San Diego State game coming up this Saturday at 7:30 at Sam Boyd Stadium. But, Coach, it doesn't get much more frustrating, I'm sure, than what that game against Fresno State.
Yeah, I mean, we had so many opportunities in that game all the way up until the latter part of the third quarter to get back in that thing. But, you know, when you have five turnovers, you know, you're making the type of mistakes we made defensively, just, you know, not taking care of our assignments. That's what's going to happen. So, we had some poignant conversations about it on Sunday, and, you know, a lot of guys took a lot of ownership of it, coaches included. But we just got to get back out there, got to execute at a high level, and we got to play with a lot more discipline this week coming up.
All right, lost the game by 29 and then get 28 points off those five turnovers. That's got to just smart throughout.
Yeah, you know, and then they're critical turnovers, too. I mean, you've got, obviously, you know, we got a chance to go ahead and tie the game up, you know, down eight, and we fumble it, scoop and score. All of a sudden, it's a 15-point game. You battle yourself back. There's 4 minutes left, and I believe the third quarter, you get it back to, you know, in striking distance, and you just start creating turnover after turnover after turnover. I mean, five is too much to recover from. And, you know, I read it, you know, one of the NFL guys was saying this week, you know, it was Lovie Smith from Illinois, and when they interviewed him after the game, he just said, hey, the whole game's about turnovers. You win the turnover battle, chances are you're going to win the game. When you lose it 5-0, that results in a 29-point loss.
And looked early on like the Rebels might get a turnover. They ruled initially a fumble on a ball where the Fresno State quarterback, Reyna, had his arm cocked to throw. The ball came loose. And, Caleb, what'd you see on that?
I thought it was clear as day as a fumble. That's just my opinion. And, you know, obviously the call was what it was. It got reversed on a booth review. I think the call on the field was a fumble. And I don't see personally how you could overturn something like that after looking at it on replay over and over in slow motion, and to come up with something to say that wasn't a fumble, it kind of shocked me. And that was a big swinging point. That's a, you know, huge change of possession. Rebels had the ball in scoring striking distance right away, and that could have put 7 points on the board potentially. So for the Rebels not to get that one, that's a shame to me, honestly. But, you know, the call was what it was.
Yeah. Generally, you look at a game like that with a score like that, 56-27, and in the garden variety, just the precursory look at it is, oh, okay, never in the game. But this is one of those rare times when you have a wide gap in terms of points where the Rebels actually could have been right there at the end.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we got it down to a 4-point game almost before the half, and then they went down and scored, you know, to extend the lead. And then we open up the second half. We drive right down the field, kick a field goal, so you're, you know, 1-score game again. You know, got a good stop on defense, getting the ball back. And, you know, we had plenty of opportunities. You know, we just got to own the things that we did. And, you know, and the turnovers were a key thing. Again, you know, I can go back to them all night. But, you know, the first one that, you know, didn't go our way, again, I agree with Caleb. I thought it should have. I mean, that gives you a chance to be up 10-0. That's a whole different atmosphere, right? But then later on, there was another fumble on the ground. And, you know, we teach our guys, you know, we call it the city and the country, right? If it's in the city, it's a little messy, right? So you don't try to scoop and score. You jump on that ball, right? If it's in the country, it's wide open, go ahead and scoop and score. Well, there's a ball on the ground. We got a guy right there. It's an easy fumble recovery, and instead of jumping on it, we try to scoop and score. They recover the ball, and we would have had the ball on the 25-yard line going in. So those are big things. Those are critical errors that just can't happen if you're going to win a game like that, especially, you know, when you have the mistakes that we did.
This is a question for both of you, and we'll start with you, Caleb. When the game began late to spiral out of control, to what degree would you say that composure, lack of composure, played a role?
Well, I wouldn't preface it in terms of composure. I would say the pressing started to happen. Especially just looking at the first perspective will be Kenyon Oblak's perspective. And that last interception, namely, that he threw was kind of one of those things where he's trying to make a play to get the team back in it. Frustrated, he's had a couple of interceptions already at that point, and trying to make a play that isn't really there happen. And that's what happens when that game starts to slip away from you. You've been battling to try to get back and clawing your way back, and then you feel it slipping away one more time. It's like, let me press to make something happen. And it was evident to me even after the interception, the way he went after a blocker. And he's going after a guy trying to deliver some punishment, obviously frustrated about the way things are going. But that kind of thing is like what starts to happen when the game slips away. You start to press and try to make plays to keep the game close or to even change the momentum. And then oftentimes in that situation, you end up hurting the team even more, especially with an interception like that. But, yeah, definitely starting to press late when the scoreboard starts to slip away is what I saw there.
Yeah, and you're right on. I mean, it's do your job. That's the whole thing. Do your job. Don't do anybody else's job, and don't try to do anything spectacular. You know, great plays happen by guys doing the routine thing over and over and over, you know. And, you know, again, you know, Caden showed a lot of youthfulness at the time. It's going to happen. He's a freshman, you know, not at all disappointed in him. You know, he had that moment, and he'll learn from it, and he'll get better from it. But throughout the course of the game, there's a lot of guys that, you know, again, you know, you go a week earlier, and everyone, you know, nobody did anything special against Vanderbilt. We just played good, solid football for four quarters. That was it. Nothing spectacular. You know, and then a week later, you get guys, you know, you're in cover zero, and a guy's jumping around and, you know, trying to do too much. You know, the way we're running the ball with our backs, you know, we're bouncing everything instead of hitting the hole. And there are a lot of guys jumping gaps and, you know, guys coming out of coverage to try to tackle. It's not your job to come up and tackle a quarterback. It's not your job, right? So the whole thing is do your job. Just doing that, doing the routine thing over and over and over, and creates consistency, and that's what creates opportunities to win.
What do you tell Kenyon when he comes to the sideline, you know, after what Caleb was just referencing, you know, he because he's frustrated, he wants to go after somebody, but
yeah.
You're also the starting quarterback, so don't hurt yourself.
No doubt about it. You know, to me, on those moments, especially with a young guy, you jump right into the coaching part. All right, what was your read? What did you, I mean, he's not thinking about it. He's thinking, oh, my God, I threw another pick, and what's going on? Hey, don't worry about that. That ain't that big a deal right now. All right, let's talk about it. You know, what did you see? Why did you make the decision? Talk to me about your process. And you're trying to educate the kid so he grows up fast. You know, I patted him on the helmet, and we talked about it on the headsets. You know, do you pull him out? And I was like, absolutely not. I mean, that would be the worst thing we could have done was pull him out in that situation. He needed to learn how to swim in the deep end. You know, I mean, he was struggling a little bit mentally. You know, wasn't playing real good for that little, you know, span of time. So he needs to learn how to fight through those things.
It's interesting you say that, because we saw in the NFL on Monday with Sam Darnold, he was mic'd up. He's saying he's seeing ghosts, and a lot of people are like, hey, down the stretch when they were losing really badly, get him off the field. And Adam Gase kind of said the same thing, like, what's the point? He's got to overcome, you know, these rough moments.
You do. You got to battle your own demons. You know, if you never battle them, then you're going to face them again. So he went back in. He drove us down, scored a touchdown. I mean, again, you know, the game wasn't in jeopardy at the time, but to have the composure to get the offense back out there, to throw a nice touchdown pass, complete some balls, that did so much more for him than us taking him out of the game ever could have.
First possession of the first half, 3 points. First possession of the second half, 3 points. Discuss what that meant in terms of momentum.
Yeah, well, I mean, putting points on the board at the beginning of the game was crucial, and that was big, you know. However, in both those situations, you know, obviously you want touchdowns more than field goals. And, you know, I think that would have been big, at least one of those things to swing, you know. So we have to do a better job of – I mean, we did a good job of, you know, taking time off the clock, having a really good drive. But you got to punch those things in, and we got to do a better job of that.
And also on the flip side of that, defensively, to start both halves, starting the game and then starting the second half, 3-and-out, I believe, in a missed field goal attempt in the first half, and then – again, a 3-and-out by the defense. You get Fresno off the field, get the ball back. You kick that field goal, and then another missed field goal, if I'm not mistaken, or another turnover, another stop by the defense to start both halves.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the plan was there. I mean, and it was obvious. I mean, you know, we had a good offensive plan to go down and move the ball. We had over 420 yards. So, I mean, it's, again, you know, defensively, We gave up some chunk plays that were, I mean, when you look at, you know, their starting backs and the yard, they when you look at yards they rushed for, it's 200 and some odd, but that didn't really tell the story. One of those runs was 82 yards on a fly sweep, right? Their starting tailback had 50 some odd yards. Had a really good plan to go ahead and stop the run and do the things we wanted to do. But five turnovers that lead to 28 points, we can talk all night, and that's just the bottom line. You're not going to win those games. You're not going to be close.
The first interception looked like a catchable pass to Gesser.
It was a catchable pass. You know, again, you know, Kenny did a good job, kind of put the ball. I mean, it was a bang-bang. It was a good defensive play, too, so it's not just a drop. It's a ball that needs to be caught, but at the same time, the defensive back there is challenging it, but the ball can't pop up in the air like that. You got to do a better job of fighting that thing off.
So those kind of interceptions as a quarterback, I think, were the most frustrating because you understand coming to the sideline, you're going to get the blame for that. As a quarterback, the quarterback always does on interceptions, right? But as a coach, how do you approach that understanding? Because in that situation, I'm thinking he makes the right read. He throws it on time. Like you said, just a good play that you end up on the short end.
Well, and, you know, Coach Justice is on the, you know, upstairs on the headsets. And, I mean, as soon as he came off, first thing we told Kenny, hey, that was the right read. That was the right read. And then you go over and you tell something different to the receiver.
Just like that.
Not the same message for you.
No, absolutely not.
One of the key plays of the opening drive was the 45-yard pass to Noah Bean. Discuss, if you would, Coach, the emergence of Noah Bean, who's really making a lot more contributions in the recent games.
He really is. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he had to grow up a little bit, you know, really work on his work ethic and just, you know, being a better practice guy. And then, you know, as a tight end, you got to be an inline blocker. You got to be able to be physical out there on the edge. And he's really worked on that. I've seen so much maturity and growth in him over, you know, this offseason, spring, and he's done a really good job. And now he's starting to emerge as a really good football player. Now the job for us, though, is get him the ball more. You know, we talk about that as a staff moving forward. I mean, this guy's explosive, and he's only touching the ball 2-3 times a game. That's on us. We got to do a better job of getting him the ball in space. You know, now he's got to do a good job of making sure he takes care of things when he does. But we need to focus, you know, on him in the game plan a little bit more.
Also, the touchdown pass to Grimes. Dial up that one for us. Go through that one. And he bobbled a little bit, but it was a nice route.
It was good play design. You know, we send the slot guy in motion. It rolls the safety, so it opens up the slant hole. And then, you know, Oblad threw a really nice ball. Little lack of concentration on Grimes' part. You know, the one thing, you know, we talked to him about, though, is that DB quit on the play. If he doesn't quit on the play, that ball, that's not a touchdown. I mean, he bobbled it, and then he caught it the second time. But the DB, as soon as he saw the ball in his hands the first time, just completely stopped playing. But a really good guy, a guy who's, you know, playing with a little bit more, you know, hunger in him, he's going to go ahead and challenge that thing, and that won't be a touchdown the next time. So we can't get away with that twice. But it was a really good ball and real good play design.
All right, we're going to get more to nuts and bolts through that, and also off to the San Diego State game coming up this Saturday at Sam Boyd State as the Rebels take on the Aztecs. And the Aztecs, of course, every year they're a team that likes to run the ball a lot and relies on big plays on defense. But time now for our first timeout right here from Parkway Tavern on the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. Back with a whole lot more. This is the Tony Sanchez Radio Show on the UNLV Sports Network on Learfield IMG. Welcome back to the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Parkway Tavern, the new home of the Tony Sanchez Radio Show and the official home of the Rebels on the road. Come join us every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. for food and drink specials during the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. And from donating goods or being a mentor to becoming a licensed foster parent, there are so many ways you can say, count me in, and support children in foster care. To learn more, call 702-455-0181. That's 702-455-0181. Or visit countmein.vegas. Tony Sanchez Radio Show with Caleb Herring, Steve Caulfield. Good to see you, Steve.
Yes, finally, I can make a show.
All right.
I'm happy.
So how many more shows are we going to see on?
I think the rest. Yeah, I had a lot of road shows with the show leading in, so I was kind of racing around town. Don't want to kill myself or someone else coming over here. So yeah, I was right up the road.
That'd be really winning mojo, right?
Yes, yes.
There you go.
By the way, no wings?
No wings.
No wing challenge?
You know what? I shied away from them today, and I probably should have.
Was it last week you did 20?
It was 20. 2 weeks in a row, consecutive, back-to-back. Repeat champion of
the
world.
To be young, Russ. Not that you're old. I am, but to be young and in shape, actually.
I've got a lot of bounce back still in these legs, so I can do things like that every now and then.
But I was laying 3.5 wings on that one. So, I mean, that wasn't a payday
for me. Next time
I
get wings, take the over. I'm telling you. Take the over.
So, meanwhile, Tony here has got chicken wings. I hope they're good.
Chicken fingers. They're good. They're really good.
Chicken fingers. Nice. Nice.
They'll be nice.
Very good. All right. What about you?
I'll grab something.
You're going to cash in? You're going to cash
eventually,
in
here? Eventually, yeah.
Very nice.
You
all right, well,
force me to eat.
Rebels and Fresno State. So, Coach, we exhausted the whole business about turnovers, but there are other critical errors. I mean, this fellow Reyna, the quarterback for Fresno State, decent athlete, but he really, you can make the argument, shouldn't be running the ball at will the way he pretty much did.
Well, he had three carries, and they're critical carries, you know, other than, you know, scrambling. But you got to hold the edge. I mean, we have guys responsible for that. You got read zone away. All you got to do is keep your shoulder square, come on down, counsel it, and he hands the ball off. I mean, it's just football 101, and, you know, we just kept getting our shoulders, you know, opposite of parallel. I mean, you're boxing yourself out, and you're crossing over the tackle, which you don't need to do. You got to stay in space. Something we rep all the time and did not execute during the game, and it really hurt us.
So that's that's basically an end, then peeking inside.
It's a safety.
It's a safety, okay.
Yeah, so anytime you get read zone away, your drop safety is going to go ahead and he's going to come down to about 7 yards, and he's going to stay outside of the box. So when the quarterback looks, he should see a safety sitting there with his shoulders parallel, just sitting there. And you don't got to do anything else other than sit there, right? The guy pulls, you make the tackle in space, right? But all three of those occasions, our safety went across with the back. Like, I mean, he stepped into the tackle box, and the edge got exposed.
One of the unfortunate byproducts of the turnovers, the defense on the field just way, way too much in this game.
Yeah, on the field too much, but, you know, to get off the field, you got to play better too. So, you know, again, there wasn't a lot of things. You know, I mean, we did some good things at times, right? But, you know, we had the first turnover, the defense holds, they miss a field goal. That was a big deal. You know, they drive down, defense holds beginning of the second half. You know, they miss another field goal. The defense did some good things. They got the ball out on the ground, didn't do a good job of recovering it, but the big plays really killed us. I mean, turnovers and big plays. You had the fly sweep, Warren cover zero, and corner doesn't go with the guy across the field, and all of a sudden, you know, I think it's run down to the 2-yard line, right? And again, when you look at the score, it looks a little egregious. So you got that one play there, and then the offense, you know, throws a pick, goes down to the 1-yard line, they score on the next play there. That's not really on them. So overall, it just wasn't a good football game.
We do want to mention one positive on the sweep that went 83 yards. He did get chased down.
Yeah. Ray Jackson, Rashad did a phenomenal job. I mean, that's a big kid, a 230-pound kid, just turning around and catching their fastest receiver. That was impressive to watch on film.
And at least it sets an example for the rest of the defenders that, you know, the play's not over until it's over.
There's no doubt about it. You know, and that's the one thing about our guys. You know, I've said it week in and week out, but we got to be more consistent. You know, if we're gonna win a bunch of games down the stretch, you know, we got to get ourselves back in the win column. We got to play more consistent. But the effort's been there. It never stops. I mean, our guys do a good job of playing throughout the entire game. We just got to do a better job of executing.
On that play in particular, we talked about it last week during the coach show that Fresno is known, or this season has been known, for taking those shot plays or trick plays, doing little wrinkles to try to manufacture points because they've been struggling a little bit. Was that jet sweep out of that explosion to a spread formation, was that a little bit of that wrinkle?
Well, that's the frustrating thing. That's just a basic routine play that you see every single Saturday. I mean, there was no trickiness to that. That was just, I mean, literally, just go across the motion with him. You know what I'm saying? Even if he gets some yards, it's not a big deal, but you got to tackle him. But when you're in zero and the front's matching the zero and corner doesn't go across with that guy, I mean, he's got him. All he's got to do is you get about 8 yards, run through, stay on top, make sure you have outside leverage, boom, tackle him. Even if he gets a, you know, 8 or 9 yard gain, still not that big a deal. You get back in, but you got to go across with him. So first play of the game, they tried their stuff right away.
Right,
you know what I'm
right.
saying? Play action pass, that's a shot we were talking about. And they did it a couple other times. You know, and then another big one, too, was when we had the holding penalty later in the game, and I believe it was fourth quarter, right? And we get the holding penalty when it looks like we're driving, and we end up having to, you know, turn the ball over on fourth down. Next play, they take the shot, and they get it over the top, you
right.
know, and then put another one in.
Yep, 28-20. It was that close,
yeah.
despite everything else that had gone on.
Oh, yeah.
Now, injuries. We touched on this during the break, but Ray Jackson, Greg Francis.
Both cleared, both good to go. You know, limited in practice this week, but they'll both be playing on Saturday.
All right. It's great news, obviously.
It is.
The last thing you need.
Will be out.
Right.
Defensively, so that kind of hits the depth a little bit. But other than that, we'll be good to go. Chad Magyar is a little banged up, but he's cleared to go. He, you know, a little hobbled around today at practice, so we're going to take it off in the next 2 days. He'll get that knee right, and then he'll be good.
I wanted to mention the cornerback play, and, you know, obviously there was a mistake on the end of the first half play
yeah.
by Plummer. But in general, the last few games, teams are taking shots. They're not succeeding on the shots maybe like they did a year ago. So I think that has been an improvement.
There's no doubt. I mean, our guys are playing better back there, and that's been really good to see. I mean, you go, again, a week ago, you know, against Vanderbilt, and our guys challenged everything, did a really, really good job. We just, you know, we let our guard down a little bit in this game, and we did some really undisciplined things. I didn't think we challenged the ball as well. They didn't give a bunch of deep balls. We gave up that one that Jericho did. But I just thought some of the routine outs and the comebacks and some of the digs, I thought we did a poor job of challenging those things. And in weeks past, we've done a better job of that, and I just didn't see that.
Yeah, I noticed Tim Skipper came over a couple of times to the cornerbacks and said, you know, you can't have that big a cushion. You got to get up. You got to get your hands on him. And he was really trying to emphasize that and reemphasize that.
No doubt about it. You know, and we talked about a lot on Sunday and all week throughout the course of practice, really challenging our guys. We've done a bunch of one-on-ones and just put them right back in those tough situations. And it's hard. You know, I mean, corner's a lonely place. I mean, you're out there on an island, but, you know, you got to have some grit to you. And you got to challenge guys on every single play. And you can't be fearful of giving up a score. If you are, you're dead. So our guys got to do a better job of that. And I believe they will this week. They've worked hard, and they need to. If we're going to go out and beat San Diego State this weekend, we're going to have to play better there.
You mentioned Chad Maguire, the fumble on the first carry. Then yeah. We didn't see him till the second half, and you talked about his knee, but was there migraine also?
Yeah, so, you know, he comes off after, you know, the fumble's unfortunate, right? And, you know, we talked to him about that a little bit, but then that next series, it's like, all right, you ready to go? And he's like, you know, I can't. I got a migraine right now. I'm, you know, seeing a little blurry. So, obviously, from there, you just kick it to the medical staff, and you don't even worry about it until they come back and grab you and say, all right, he's good. He's ready to go. So that didn't happen until halftime, so we didn't have him in the first half.
And you talk about the mentality of, you know, both running backs, Charles and Maguire, both fumble, put the ball on the ground.
Yep.
The mentality this week in practice, obviously ball security has been, you know, top of the list. How have they responded?
They responded well, and we've worked on it, and we've been very poignant about it. And, you know, they know it, they own it, and we got to do a really good job of coaching it, high and tight, locking it away, make sure the exchanges are where they need to be, because, again, you know, the three interceptions and those two turnovers are just critical, and you can't live through that again.
All right, decent game for Darren Woods. Made a couple of nice catches.
He did.
Continues to move forward, progress.
Yeah, no, Darren's a good player. He's been around for a long time, and it was good to see him make some of those plays. And, you know, I thought we did a good job of just, you know, getting the ball to guys in space and making a guy miss. Makai had a nice one where he got a first down, like a six-yard gain. Darren had the nice stiff arm, took it down the left sideline, you know, for a big game. He also had, when we ran a Nike, which is a, you know, rollout, he did a really good job of catching that thing for a first down when the ball was challenged. So I thought Darren had a good body of work in the game.
Detail, if you would, Coach, some of the teachable moments for Kenyon Oblad in this game.
Well, there's a lot of them. I mean, again, you know, at the end of the first half, you've got a wide-open guy running a curl route. And they had just scored to make it an 11-point game. And, you know, we're driving down. There's 19 seconds left on the clock, and all we're trying to do is get in field goal range. He's got a wide-open receiver. He feels the rush and just completely airmails the ball. And, you know, so we end up having a punt right before the half, and that was a really easily, you know, should have been an easily attempted field goal right there. So that was a big mistake, critical, because then you come out of the first half, and now you're down eight. You drive down, you kick the field goal, right, and or score a touchdown, right. And now it's a five-point game or less than that. So, you know, that was big. You know, obviously, you know, he gets flushed out of the pocket at the end, that last pick that he threw, or the second to last pick that he threw, and, you know, he's got a rush on him. You don't need to try to throw that ball away. Just go down, take the sack, live to fight another day. So things like that. And then that one where he just kind of airmailed it again to the safety right after that, I mean, that's just where you got to calm down. You know, calm down. You know, you got to flush it, right? I don't care what happened, last series or last play. I don't care if you threw an 80-yard touchdown or you threw a pick six. It makes no difference. You have to flush it and move on, and that's part of his maturation. He'll learn from that.
Yeah, and then on top of that, don't go take on blockers full speed ahead. Yeah. Trying to injure yourself on the last play unnecessarily.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those deals where the competitiveness kicks
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah. You love it, but you get at the same time, all right, you're playing quarterback here.
No doubt. You know, and it's one of those deals where you tell them, you know, you calm down on that, but, you know, when you're struggling, your teammates need to see you do that. They need to see you running there, running into the fray, and take a shot if you got to take a shot, so that everyone will still follow you, you know. So I think his teammates appreciated that, you know, and then we'll coach him up on when and when not to do that.
And Caleb, what are some of the things that you saw in addition?
Well, I was going to point out the fourth down conversion. I think that was a growth point for him. I think rolling out, I believe it was the same kind of Nike rollout play, design rollout, intended to get that slot receiver. The zone look kind of took it away, and I think, made a decision very early on that rollout that he's going to run and go get this and put his head down and went and got it. And we haven't seen him run much. He hasn't, you know, pulled it on read option or done much with his legs, but he made a decisive decision there and went for it, protected himself as much as he could, but at the same time, he's not going to slide there. And I think that's a part of maturing as well, like knowing the situation. You got to get 6 yards. You're right there, 6-7. You go to surrender yourself and slide to protect yourself, you might get a bad spot from the ref. So putting his head in there, making sure he gets the yardage, keeping the drive alive, I think that was one of the major learning points there. And then every quarterback's going to take their lumps, and every quarterback's going to throw interceptions. It's about how you respond to it and going through adversity and dealing with it. And Coach said it earlier, keep him out on the field, letting him learn through it and settle himself down and come back out and throw that touchdown was huge. That's a huge part of his growth and development, and it'll go a long way toward his maturity.
One of the other narratives that you hit on about three or four times during the game, and this one may seem ridiculous, you were very caught up with the spotting of the football.
Very. It's crucial because it changes a lot about it. I mean, you go from, you know, third and one on the 25 to first and 10 on the 25 or on the 24. And that's a huge difference in how you're going to attack the play call. You know, you get first and 10 on the 24-yard line, you may take a shot to the end zone. But third and one, more conservative, you know, the defense gets a chance to rest. You may even have to burn a timeout to decide what you're going to do from there. And coming up short on those plays where maybe it looked like you shouldn't have is a big difference in calling the game. It's a game of inches, and everybody says that, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty of the X's and O's, you understand why a first down conversion on second down rather than having to go for it on third down is huge to your offensive game plan.
How do you handle that as a coach? Because you have so much you're dealing with. If you're having to worry about spots all the time, maybe it's taking your attention off other things, but to Caleb's point, it is important. So you kind of have to pick your spots when you're going to flip out about spots.
Yeah, you know, and so a lot of times, you know, I'm asking them in the box, hey, what do you see up there? What do you see? Because they have replay up there, right? And they're telling us, like, there was that one with Chad.
Chad, yeah, it's a first down.
It was obviously first down. And sometimes, you know, you get after the officials a little bit. You have your back and forth, right? But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they're the ones who are, you know, making the call and they're in charge. But when you go back and you confirm it when you watch film, it gets real frustrating. And those are the conversations you have before the next game with guys.
All right, we'll get to the second half of the show, and we're going to chat with Cedric Cormier, who's had a full decade now as one of the Rebel coaches, and we're going to chat with him. Also get into the upcoming game this Saturday night against San Diego State. Before we take our next break, OurID.com is giving away $10,000 to one lucky fan if the Rebels score a safety during this season. Make sure to go to UNLVRebels.com/OurID. UNLVRebels.com/OurID to register for your chance to win. Time for our next break in the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Parkway Tavern and brought to you in part by Findlay Toyota. This is the UNLV Sports Network on Learfield IMG. Back here at the Tony Sanchez Radio Show, live from Parkway Tavern. And now for the moment you've all been waiting for, Findlay Chevrolet is your home for. Come by today and see why thousands have made the switch to Findlay Chevrolet, located on the 215 Beltway between Rainbow and Jones, Nevada's number one volume Chevrolet dealer. Find new roads just for fun. Caleb even had some unneeded help back here. Like Caleb needs the help.
I've got backup singers now.
That's right. And we don't want to just ruffle the feathers of our new engineer Nick here. You know, he's a Vegas native. He's joining us for the rest of the season. Home and road, welcome Nick, along with head coach Tony Sanchez. And the one and only Caleb Herring and Steve Cofield, Russ Langer back here at Parkway Tavern, and this week on West Flamingo. All right, we talked a little bit about injuries, but let's talk a little bit about the staff, coach, because these are some of the unsung heroes, guys like Kyle Wilson, Sean Manuel. I know you guys go back a long way.
Yeah, we go back for a long time. We were 18 years old, playing JUCO together. But the staff, you know, it's the on-the-field staff. Like you talk about, it's the medical staff. It's the recruiting staff. It's, you know, Sarah Doty, who's our admin assistant.
Yeah.
You know, she takes care of all of us. People that help us travel, you know, set up our travel arrangements. And there's a lot of people behind the scenes, you know, marketing. I mean, so many people that work really hard to kind of make the whole thing go. So we appreciate all of them.
All right, now wrapping up, we're going to the second half of the Fresno State game. One of the things that happened early on, it was, we mentioned 28-20, Evan Austrie breaking up a Fresno State game, breaking the pass up in the end zone. That was one of the better defensive plays made in that half.
Yeah, it was. I mean, again, you know, we needed more of those plays. And, you know, there were moments. I mean, when you watch that game, I mean, again, it was a competitive game. I mean, God, I remember coming out after halftime talking to the CBS, and they're like, wow, this is a fun game and this and that. And it wasn't fun too much longer after that. But there were some good plays on both sides of the ball. You know, again, just, you know, critical errors. But our guys played hard, and they did some good things at times. Just too many mental errors.
All right. Now, Caleb, when you watched the second half, you saw some of the things go on. To what degree could you relate to some of that? Because you had a learning curve of your own for a while when you first took over back in relief of Nick Sherry.
Yeah, so I definitely had my fair share of learning opportunities and bad games from a quarterback perspective where things just weren't going my way on an individual basis. And then also watching a game where you felt like you hurt yourself more than the other team hurt you. And I think that's one of the more frustrating things as a player is realizing at some point in the game when you look up at the scoreboard and say, man, this could be a lot different had I done this or had we done this. And it's a lot better to, I guess, say that from a place instead of saying this team's just that much better than us. Because at the end of the day, if you want to take a moral victory, not into that thing, but if you want to take a moral victory, say you beat yourself. But it's almost more frustrating to say that. Like there's no second chances in football. You know, you don't get to go back out and run it back after the game and say, like, oh, do over. Let's do this. The game's over. It's in the books now. And that's probably the worst feeling. I've definitely had that as a player, probably more than I'd like to admit. But, yeah, that's a part of growing and developing. I think it's necessary at some point. You hate that it happens, or, you know, you hate that humbling experience happens in a game where it counts, where people are keeping score. You'd rather feel that during practice or something that doesn't really count as much. But it happens, and you got to try to make the most of it. The good thing about football and most sports is you get to come back out the next week and try to wipe the slate clean and do it all over again and get that taste out of your mouth. And that's hopefully the attitude that the Rebels have had all week in practice is wiping that out, eliminating those errors, and putting together a good performance and a win on Saturday.
All right, Coach, when you take a player aside on a one-on-one basis and you have film and you want to discuss something that they need to obviously get corrected, you're able to get a sense at that moment as to whether or not the advice is sinking in?
Yeah, I mean, it comes with maturity, and I mean, that's just reading people. That's body language. It's eyes. It's, you know, I mean, the way they communicate with you, and, you know, those are all big things. And we try to coach those guys up on, you know, accepting, you know, coaching. You know, every, you know, we live in a kind of a soft society nowadays where everyone's like, oh, critical, you're being hard. I mean, no, we're coaching you up. You know, we're trying to help you. I mean, I don't care what profession you're in, there's always something to learn from, right? And so that's our job, is to make sure we do a really good job of it. And we actually do that to ourselves too. I mean, we coach our coaches. So I think the guys, you know, we've got some older veteran guys, especially on the defensive side. They do a really good job of it. There's some guys on the offensive side, you know, a little bit more youthful there, where you're still walking them through it. But it's no different than teaching in a classroom. There's visual ways. There's, you know, auditory ways. There's, you know, again, getting up and writing things. There's going on the field and walking through things. So, for example, Sunday we came in. I had my meeting with the guys, and I put up a 40-play clip, and I walked through every single critical detail. And then from there, they're going to go with their coordinators and watch it, and then they're going to go with the position coaches. They're going to get it a bunch of different ways. Then we go on the field and we do a 15-minute period, and all it is correction. So every mistake we made in the game, we put the exact same setup there, we run the exact same play, and we correct it. So you're trying to teach it in a bunch of different ways, and film doesn't lie.
Right. And Caleb, I want to ask you about this aspect of it also as a former player. With some sports, and I don't know if it's a case of today's younger athlete, or has this been it's a generational thing, but I'd like for you to address this. With some sports, at least, there's some players who might not be so inclined to listen to a coach, but if a fellow player gives them the exact same advice, that they'll listen to.
Yeah, and that's a tough situation, because it's a maturity thing, and that's one of the things of being coachable. Maybe, I don't want to say there's deeper issues with it, but that's an authority thing, where I'd rather take criticism from my peer, learn from somebody that I feel is doing it. And it's sometimes hard for players to relate to a coach and look, he's just a coach. He doesn't understand, you know, what I'm going through. I'm playing this game. I'm doing this. Sometimes it's hard for players in every sport, I think, to look at a coach and understand that maybe he has some life experience, some coaching experience, some playing experience that he's trying to impart on me to help me correct my own mistakes. So for whatever reason, that doesn't connect with a lot with some players. And so it's easier to take criticism from a guy who's lining up next to you every day and kind of coaches you up on that, because it feels like it's coming from a place of relatability. And it may be a misguided idea, but I think that is a problem with a lot of people, a lot of young players in this generation. It's just like Coach said, it's coachability. You have to be able to be coached. And this is a life skill that more people need to focus on, is being able to accept criticism from all angles, whether it's your teammate, a coach, that guy over there. If it's valid criticism, you should accept it and learn from it. But, sometimes it's just easier, I think, for players. You have this kind of fraternity amongst yourselves where you say, if my guy next to me, my guy that I'm a friend with that goes to battle with me, try to correct something, I just receive it a little better.
Yeah, well, leadership's a big deal there. You know, you talk about it, and, you know, what's the essence of leadership? It's influence, right? So I think when you're leaders, you're older guys, you need to coach them as hard as you coach the rookies and the young guys. When they see their peers being accepting of it, communicating at a high level, and they don't tolerate their teammates, the younger ones who have those attitude problems sometimes,
right, right.
That just by them being coachable, the older guys, you know, the guys that are kind of your stars out there, when they're allowing themselves to be coached like that, there's nowhere for anybody else to hide. So I think it's really important too that you got to coach your best guys as hard as you do anybody else, because just that whole visual of seeing that whole thing, that process happen, it really, the young guys go like, oh heck, this is our culture, this is what we do. And that's what it comes down to culture.
Cedric Cormier is a recruiting coordinator. He's also been overseeing the wide receivers for the better part of a decade. Coach, what about Cedric Cormier?
He's a great guy. I've been around for a long time, and does a really good job with that group. So it's a talented group. We got to get those guys locked in. He's got his handful with that room, but they're a good group of guys. There's a lot of youthfulness in that group.
It's always the receivers, right?
Yeah. You got Woods. It's like the only older guy. It is always the receivers. I was an ex receiver too, so I can say that, right? But he does a good job.
All right, without further ado, a chat with one of the assistant coaches on the UNLV football team, Mr. Cedric Cormier. Visiting with Cedric Cormier of the Rebels. Cedric, discuss, if you would, first of all, your job overseeing the wide receivers on this team. What are some of the things that you're responsible for?
Well, I think when you're coaching, period, you're responsible for everything. I mean, you're basically their father, when they're away from home. So I got a lot of guys from different backgrounds, from all over the country. So I got to be hands-on with them on and off the field, making sure they're going to class, making sure they're doing the right things, hanging with the right people. And then on the field, just making sure they're executing their assignments and, most importantly, catching the football.
Now, this crew this year academically is way ahead of some of the teams out of the past, and you're uniquely qualified to talk about this. You've been around 10 years now.
Well, yeah, I mean, the one thing that I know, when Coach Sanchez was got there, he put an emphasis on that to really get that and hold the guys accountable. I think us practicing in the morning has really, really turned it to a whole nother level, because guys are up now. They got no excuses to have to practice, go straight to class.
All right. Now, for a receiver, some of the challenges involved in improving and getting the job done.
Just working on your craft every day. I mean, the receiver's a unique position, whereas, you can catch 100 balls during the week and in practice and get a lot of repetition in the game. You may only get those two targets, so you better take advantage of them.
Some quarterbacks say that the receivers have a way of saying, hey, I was open every time they come back to a huddle. So how does a receiver deal with sometimes a frustration of being open and maybe not getting the ball?
Well, you just have to deal with it. And I hold, I teach the guys, you don't count your reps, you make your reps count. So however many opportunities you get, you got to make them count.
All right. What about the element of chit-chat up and back between receivers and the defense? There's always talk about trash talk and how guys try to get each other into each other's heads.
That's part of the game. It's a one-on-one battle. I mean, the wide receiver's job is to embarrass the DB, and the DB's job is to not get embarrassed, or vice versa, embarrass the wide receiver. So it's always going to be that competitive. If you're a competitive guy, you want to win that opportunity.
You've had a chance to be around some of the really top guys, Devontae Davis, Devontae Boyd among them. Who are some of the other guys, one or two, that you would point to as being really top pupils for you?
Phillip Payne was a big-time guy. He's the all-time leading receiver as far as touchdown receptions. When I first got there, Mike Johnson. I had just missed Ryan Wolf, you know what I mean, but I got a chance to be around him, seeing film with him. And then some of the guys now that we have, I mean, when you look at on the grand scheme of things, I think Darren Woods is going to go down as a very productive guy over the years. But definitely the both of the Devontaes will always be, to me, two of the top guys. But, it goes year in and year out, you know, you got a Tyleek Collins now that's kind of blossomed. He's still a young guy, so, you know, you just want to keep the tradition going.
Visiting with Cedric Cormier of the Rebels. Cedric, the opening of this practice facility, what does it mean for the program?
I think it takes it to a whole nother level. It's big time. I mean, I was talking to Coach Sanchez today about that. I remember when he first got hired, the very first thing he said, man, I want to get a facility built here on the grass. And now that grass isn't there, it's a building built right there. So it was real cool today. I mean, I got a little emotional just seeing it because I remember when he first talked about this. And just to see this thing through is pretty cool.
Now, from a recruiting standpoint, people talking about the Raiders Stadium, but guys only come there 6 days a year. They're going to be here every single day. I would think that's huge.
This is their home away from home. I mean, this is what, and it's player friendly. I mean, you know, as you go through that, you'll see everything they want in there. I mean, from the nutrition standpoint, the academic standpoint, the entertainment standpoint, as far as they got a players lounge there. If they need haircuts, they can do that. The training room. I mean, it's a one stop shop in there.
Cedric, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
No problem, Russ.
Cedric Cormier of the Rebel coaching staff, our guest, back with a whole lot more. This is the UNLV Sports Network from Learfield IMG. The Tony Sanchez Show, live from Parkway Tavern. How would you like to be able to listen to us while synced up to your TV in the comfort of your own home? Go to syncmygame.com, syncmygame.com. to find out how. The show is brought to you in part by Findlay Toyota. At Findlay Toyota, we speak 14 different languages. No matter how you say it, you'll always get a great deal at Findlay Toyota. Steve Cofield, Caleb Herring, head coach Tony Sanchez, yours truly, Russ Langer here at Parkway Tavern. I want to thank Cedric Cormier. Had a nice chat with him. And on the subject of coaches, the fellow's been calling the shots on the offensive coordinator side of things for quite some time as Barney Cotton. And Tony, I think you have an update on Coach Cotton and what's going on with him medically.
Yeah, you know, what a sad thing, you know, losing him in July before the season. And he's such a great man, but he had a heart transplant yesterday, so he was on the list. He's been waiting for about 5 months now, and they finally called him in and said, hey, it's time to go. So my understanding, you know, from his wife is that everything went well. You know, he's resting. You know, we've all sent him text messages, and, you know, she's sent him back to everybody, let him know that he's doing good, he's in recovery. And, you know, it's critical, too. Everyone out there, you know, say a prayer for him, and don't forget about him for the next bunch of months, because it's so critical to see, you know, if that heart takes and how he responds to it and things like that. So we love him, Miss Barney, and we wish him the best.
What makes him so valuable?
Well, he's just been around the game for so long. You saw the drastic change in our offense from what we took over at the beginning to the way the run game, you know, top 20 run offenses, a bunch of years in a row, you know, scoring average right at 30. And, you know, he's so experienced and been around for so long. He could make so many adjustments in such a short amount of time. You know, his experience and just his ability to teach, you know, that offensive line really flourished under him. So, you know, we got a great O-line coach now, and we got a good young coordinator now. And, you know, Garen took over in a tough spot, you know, and it's not that Garen's not good at it, and he's going to continue to be really good at it. It's hard to find out in July, you know. So he got his feet wet real fast. But, again, more important than football, Barney's a better man, you know, better husband, better father than he is a football coach. So that's the guy that we're all rooting for.
San Diego State coming up this Saturday. Rocky long teams, certain things characterize them.
Yeah.
Big-time defense, big-time run on the ball.
I did San Diego radio today, and I told him, I said, God, you know, Rocky has built a program that you want to go ahead and, you know, Xerox. You know, you want to go ahead and copy that thing. I mean, he's just done a great job over a number of years of, you know, recruiting hard-edged guys. They do a really good job. They're very sound. They play really physical, really violent brand of football. They're going to get downhill. They're going to run the ball short in the game, and he's done a really, really good job there. So, you know, my hat's off to him. You know, he's a good guy, too. You know, I've spent a lot of time talking with him, and, you know, they do a good job. But when you watch them on film this year, they got a really good record, and they played a ton of close ball games. I mean, a ton of close. Even last week's San Jose game, that thing went all the way down to the wire. You know, you got a 6-point win over Weber State. You know, Wyoming game, they're down the majority of the game. They find a way to win it at the very end, and they just find a way to win. I mean, that's the hallmark of a good program, is when, you know, you get to a point where you've had some success and your guys just believe, they figure it out. I mean, some of the stuff's unconventional to the way they do it, you know, and it's just, again, it's just that whole belief system. And once you get that mojo, so to speak, you got to run with it. I mean, that's so big. Momentum is a huge thing. It's hard to quantify, but, man, when you see it and you recognize it, kind of like the year you guys had, Caleb,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and once you catch fire, it's like, wow, man, this thing can go.
Juwan Washington, good player?
He's a good player. He's a really good player. You know, they've had a line of really good backs there for a long time. They're kind of running back by committee. I mean, there's not too many, you know, times where you look and they're seven games into the season, their leading rusher has 300 and some odd yards. I mean, normally they're way ahead of that, but they've kind of just broken it up. There's four different guys carrying the football. The offensive line's really good, but, you know, their big thing is they're just going to play defense. They're going to create all kinds of chaos, get you off schedule. And they'll win ugly on offense a little bit more so this year than in years past.
I've had the privilege, or I guess task, of going against that chaotic Rocky Long defense. And
yeah,
with Kenyon and as a young quarterback coming in, I'm willing to bet that they're going to be as chaotic as they can be. Maximize the chaos if they can on defense. How have you prepped Kenyon for that defense?
Well, we let them know, man, it's coming. And, you know, obviously you work it. And until you get underneath it, though, it's hard. I mean, we charted one game where they brought a blitz 37 times in a row. I mean, so they're going to bring
my gosh.
It. Yeah. I mean, there's four-man, you know, they'll get, you know, kind of exotic with a four-man pressure, which is kind of a normal pressure, but there's a lot of loops and twists. But you're going to get a lot of fives, a lot of six. Not as much seven, but you'll get some seven-man. But really those five- and six-man pressures that you might see 15 or 20 times in a game, and that's a high volume, we'll probably see that thing 45 times, you know. Yeah. And again you put blood in the water a little bit with a young quarterback, right? So if I jump into, you know, to Rocky's psyche and think, well, what's he going to do? He's going to go after him early. He's going to make Kenyon show that he can go ahead and handle it.
So all those blitzes has to give you an opportunity in the run game. So what do you need to do to execute to take advantage of their aggressiveness?
You know, the biggest thing is you got to shorten the splits a little bit. You got to do a really good job of eyes up, because all that twisting and stuff like that, like you can mess it up too. So you got to do a really good job of just doing a good job of surface and not being in such a rush, you know. So if you do that and get bodies on bodies, there will be gaps. There will be some slippage in there, and you can go ahead and hit some big runs off it. But when you look at them and you look at the last bunch of years, they do not give up many rushing yards. I mean, they are as good as anybody in the country. I mean, last bunch of years they got wins against UCLA and Arizona State and Stanford. I mean, you know, when Stanford can't run the ball on you, that's tough. So I'm not saying we can't. We did last year. We found a way to run the ball, but it was because we were really efficient in the passing game early on. So again, you know, we want to run the football, but we don't want to run into a stone wall either. We got to do a really good job of kind of softening them up and picking our spots.
Time for our final break in the Tony Sanchez Radio Show. Back with our final moments coming up right after this. This is the UNLV Sports Network, Learfield IMG. All right, friends, Intermountain Healthcare, here to be part of your Las Vegas life, and we're here to help you live an even healthier one. Intermountain Healthcare, official healthcare partner of UNLV Athletics. Last minute of the Tony Sanchez Radio Show for this week. San Diego State coming up. Got to watch their tight ends, Coach. I mean, they tend to lull teams to sleep a lot. Then they'll suddenly take shots over the top.
Yep. Bellinger's a local kid from Palo Verde High School, really good football player. So you know, got to know him well in the recruiting process. But, yeah, they're good. You know, biggest thing is, you know, you got to find a way to score points. 23 is the most points they've given up all year. I mean, if you can find a way to, you know, to get four touchdowns on the board, or, you know, kind of get into that. I mean, if you can get anywhere close to the 30s, you got a chance to win.
Got to watch the reverses, the fly sweeps. They like to run the edges quite a bit, right?
We got to watch it all. Hold down the four, all of it.
Caleb?
Hey, stop the run against San Diego State. Jump ahead early, and maybe they get out of their game plan. A little out of character, but, I mean, they're going to be a tough physical football team. They've been doing it for years under Rocky Long, so it's going to be an exciting matchup.
Biggest win of the year, one of the biggest wins of the year last year. The Rebels had.
Down in San Diego. It's a huge one.
Right. No doubt.
All right, we'll see you all on Saturday. Steve, we'll see you there. All right, Findlay Toyota for a great selection of new and pre-owned vehicles, as well as no-hassle sales reps. Come to Findlay Toyota. At Findlay Toyota, they'll do anything to sell you a car this Saturday at Sam Boyd, 7:30. Rebels hosting San Diego State. Should be a beautiful night. Hope you will join us for that one.